Good evening, everyone. This is Vicki. Welcome to my show, Return to Shambhala. I have on the show tonight, this evening, I have Wayne Perdine. He's a spiritual teacher and author. We have many things in common and many ideas that he teaches and writes about has to do with Shambhala, which, you know, is the name of my show. Wayne, hello and welcome.
Welcome. Good evening,
Vicki. Good evening. Is there anything that you would like to add to your bioinformation that I didn't express? Okay.
I'm a director of the Phoenix Heart Friends Group, which is associated with the Heart Center community. It's a spiritual community based in Montana. They have heart centers and heart friends groups all over the country and the world. And we do spiritual work, prayers and pilgrimages to help bring in the Golden Age. And that's one of the things I'll be talking about tonight. And I'm also director of the Sun Center of Phoenix, which I started about 7 years ago to spread the teachings of Hiratan Manek, or HRM, who's a disciple of Babaji, and he's going around the world teaching people how to sun gaze. And I'd like to do an entire show about that sometime. I don't think we'll have time to talk about that tonight.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea. Wonderful. We had David Lewis on the show last time I was on, which was June the 6th. And David is the director of the Heart Center, and then we're a part of that, Wayne and I. So I'm glad you brought that up, Wayne. That's great.
And the website is just heartcenter.org. People want to go to it.
Yes, it has an S on heart, hearts, theheartcenter.org. Perfect. Well, we have many things that we'd like to talk about this evening. Wayne, where would you like to start? Would you like to start with the ancient mystery schools? Would you like to speak to this topic first?
I think since we might get cut off, I'd like to talk about the reason why the storm you're experiencing in Mexico and the storms we had in the Midwest, the tornadoes,
yes,
and all the other catastrophic weather disturbances and earthquakes, volcanic eruptions.
That's a great idea. Let's
just
do that.
Signs of what's coming. And
yes.
And I want to emphasize that people shouldn't be afraid of these earth changes, weather disturbances. Just as I like to use the analogy of the prophecies of 2012 being like a diagnosis or a prognosis of a disease. And a lot of people, when they get diagnosed with cancer, they have a fatalistic attitude. But I was diagnosed with leukemia about 8 years ago, and I refused to accept the doctor's prognosis, and I said, I am not going to die of leukemia. And to me, it was a wake-up call to change my ways and to eat better, a more raw food, natural, organic diet. And I also started sun gazing as my way of curing myself. And I'm not completely cured, but my leukemia has not progressed in the last 8 years.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So I think the prophecy of 2012, and I'll be talking about Peter Dunoff's prophecy and Melchizedek's prophecy tonight, the thing to keep in mind is that it may not come to pass, or it may be mitigated depending on people's actions. whether they change or not. In the Bible, when Jonah warned the people of Nineveh, they changed, and so Nineveh was not destroyed.
That's right. That's right. So we can mitigate these prophecies.
Mitigate 2012.
Exactly.
Other prophecies. So that's the big idea I'd like to get across tonight, because I'm going to be talking about some disturbing prophecies of Peter Dunoff and Melchizedek. And the thing we need to keep in mind is that if we pray and meditate and change our ways to be more heart-centered, we can mitigate, not totally, but I think we can mitigate to a great extent what's coming.
I agree.
So I think one of the things that's coming is that our system of government is going to change. I think we're seeing that now, that people are beginning to realize that our current system, in which politicians promise to solve all our problems, isn't working. It's just making things work. And the reason is because the politicians aren't enlightened. They can't even rule themselves, as we can see in recent scandals. So how can they rule a country? So what we require is a system of government in which enlightened masters rule and the people live happily and harmoniously, following their example. And this was the government of the past golden ages. Now, I'm not talking about ancient Greece and Rome, but the more ancient and the more golden Atlantean and Lemurian civilizations. And it was also the government of the past mystery schools of the Great White Brotherhood that were established by various initiates, like Thutmose III, Akhenaten, Elisha, Orpheus, Pythagoras. And there are initiatic schools today in France and Canada and elsewhere that are based on this perfect system of government, or what I like to call it, God over men, which is what government should be. In the 19th century, Alexander Saint-Yves del Vedre called the system of government synarchy, and it's Greek for joint rule. Syn means to work with, to act in concert, as in synergy, and archy means to rule or govern, as in a monarchy, which means rule by one, or anarchy, or which means rule by no one. So synarchy is a government in which enlightened initiates are the rulers. And this is the purpose of the Great White Brotherhood. Is the ultimate purpose is to establish a world government in which humanity would be governed based on the highest spiritual and social principles of love, brotherhood, and enlightenment. Now, Saint-Yves believed that there was a spiritual brotherhood. He didn't call it the Great White Brotherhood. He said there was a brotherhood of superior beings or masters, and he claimed that he was in touch with these masters. And this was way before Theosophy, Madame Blavatsky. And in fact, he inspired Blavatsky with his teachings on synarchy and initiatic schools. So his principles of synarchy were partly based on his personal communication with these masters. And he also traveled in his finer body while his physical body was asleep at night to this underworld realm, which he called Agartha, which is known as in India and in elsewhere in Central Asia as Shambhala, which is the title of your program. So some people believe that Agartha or Shambhala is a physical place where there are physical beings, and that it's possible to travel to Shambhala or Agartha. And Nicholas Roerich spent many years on expeditions in Central Asia in search of the entrance to Shambhala. I don't believe he ever found it, but in his search he met many wise people, lamas and monasteries, who told him about Agartha. And there was the third Panchen Lama, who lived in the 18th century, who wrote The Journey to Shambhala. And in this book, he said that the journey is a spiritual journey, and that you can reach it only after you pass initiations, and only by traveling in your finer body, as Saint Thérèse did. And I believe Nicholas Roerich also traveled to Shambhala in his finer body. So it's a spiritual journey, and I think if we pray and meditate enough that we too can travel to Shambhala. If we know the techniques of outer body travel and we make calls for protection, there's teaching in the Heart Center. People can look at the Heart Center website. And there is a message from Leto, I believe it was September 19th of 2010, where the Ascended Master Leto gave very specific instructions on how to travel in your finer body to the etheric retreats. And I believe that Shambhala or Agartha is partly an etheric retreat. I think the highest level of Shambhala or Agartha is in the etheric plane. And I think there's also a physical part of Shambhala and Agartha, because there are physical tunnels in the earth. My brother-in-law, David Hatcher Childress, actually went inside a couple of these tunnels, and he said they definitely are man-made, and they go for hundreds of miles under the earth, and I think they're found in every continent. I think there's some even here in Arizona,
uh-huh.
Superstition Mountain.
I believe so. In the Madera Canyon, I believe.
Uh-huh.
In that area south of Tucson. Yes, it talks about that in Unveiled Mysteries in the book by Godfrey Ray King.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Peter Dunoff's disciple, Omran Mikhail Ivanhoff, wrote about Agartha or Shambhala. And he's in his book, New Dawn, he said that there were a lot of theories about Agartha. Some people say it's physical, some say it's only etheric, some say you can find an entrance at the North Pole. And a friend of mine always talks about going on an expedition to the North Pole to go to Agartha. But I agree with Omran that it's not important whether we prove these theories about Agartha, but what's really important is the principles of synarchy on which Agartha was founded, and how we can model first the small communities, initiatic schools, and eventually a world government on the surface of the earth based on synarchy. And Peter Dunoff and Omran said this was called the high ideal, which is the goal of the universal white brotherhood. to establish a fellowship of ascended and unascended masters to guide the spiritual destiny of mankind. This is what existed in the Golden Ages and what exists in the Agartha, which, but God willing, will exist in the near future.
And yes,
that's part of Peter Dunoff's prophecy and Melchizedek's prophecy. So, before I go into the prophecies, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the principles of synarchy, or the structure of a synarchic government.
Yes, go right ahead.
So, Saint Yves described it as a hierarchical government. At the very top, you have a trinity of masters, and he didn't name them, but I, in consultation with David Lewis of the Heart Center, I divined that they are Gautama Buddha, Lord Maitreya, the coming Buddha, and Melchizedek. So those are the trinity of the top rulers of Agartha. And under them, there are 12, what St. Yves called helpers. And I imagine that each of the 12 are like a solar hierarch. The 12 hierarchies of the sun. That is the system that's on the sun under Helios and Vesta. And they're the solar logos. And Gautama Buddha is the planetary logos. So the synarchy of Earth is probably modeled after the synarchy of the sun. So the Earth also has 12 hierarchies, which correspond to each of the 12 zodiacal signs. So they would govern the areas that those signs correspond to. And under them, there's 365 minor governors. And there's three areas of authority in synarchy. One is law, second is economy, and third is education. So under education, you have culture, art, and science. Under law, you have court, police, the army, and foreign affairs. And under economy, you'd have the government and the workers. So this is what I've been able to gather from reading Saint Yves and other sources about the structure of synarchy.
Oh, that's really interesting. I'm taking notes. Okay, I'm writing all this down. I'm not aware of the breakdown of the government, but you can see how we've tried in our government to emulate this, but we're just not there. We just don't have it. We're trying, but
we have the outer form, but what's missing is the spirit.
Yes.
And the spirit is the enlightened masters who are in touch with God. And this is why the initiatic schools, like the ones in Canada and France, have been called the next best place to heaven on earth, because they have this spirit, which is embodied in the guru. Like Master Omran, when he was an embodiment, he was the spirit of the Bon Fan community. And there's a disciple of Omran who I know, who is the spirit of the ideal society in Canada, another initiatic school. So these schools or communities are small synarchic governments, and the Heart Center is dedicated to creating more of these. I think the goal is to create 80 of these communities, initiatic schools in the United States, and they would serve as models for a future golden age society. And last spring, I taught a six-week online course through Mary University, which is the educational arm of the Heart Center. And the topic was the Initiatic School of the Great White Brotherhood as a Community of Light. And what I did was basically lay out the structure of a synarchic government at the level of a spiritual community or esoteric school. But in the last class, I presented the concept of synergy on a global scale. And I brought in the existence of the Kingdom of Agartha or Shambhala, and I told people the two prophecies of Peter Dunoff and the prophecy of Melchizedek.
Now, is this course still available on the website for anybody that's interested to take the class? Is it archived?
It will be repackaged, and people will be able to sign up for it in the future.
Oh, that's great. That's interesting. That's a great course to take.
Yeah, people can go on the website and find more information about this course and other courses that are in the future, other past courses that are going to be repackaged. The next course is going to be on July 5th and 6th. It's going to be on Shakespeare. We have one course on Shakespeare every year. This one is going to be on the Midsummer Night's Dream and As You Like It, sort of a comparison. And we'll be having a guest speaker, Peter Dawkins, who's one of the leading experts on Shakespeare during the course. So I encourage anyone who's interested in Shakespeare or Saint Germain, who was Shakespeare, to take this course.
If some of the listeners may not know that Shakespeare was Saint Germain.
Well,
that's one of
actually,
his.
He was Francis Bacon.
Francis Bacon,
Francis
right.
Bacon ascended and became Saint Germain.
Exactly. So that's why the Heart Center is studying the, still going back and looking at the Shakespearean plays, and because it all has to do with the Great White Brotherhood. Again, Saint Germain is part of that organization too. So that'll be a great conference. I'm going to be here in Mexico still, but I'm going to do it online.
Yeah, so am I.
That's
another thing. People can't attend the Heart Center events. They can do it online.
I tell you, this technology, the way we can go to school online is, it's just so wonderful, especially with the travel situation, and I'm amazed at what we can do, and I'm holding a vision for even bigger and better things for technology to bring us together to learn and share ideas.
Yeah, I think in the age of Aquarius, communication is going to be a big thing, and I think that people will be able to communicate without the technology through telepathy.
Oh, yeah, this is the step in between going to school and then telepathically being able to gather together. That's right.
Our minds will be like better than the internet. We can instantly know anything we want. Right now,
I love
it takes
that
a few
vision.
Seconds to find something out, Googling something. But in the golden age, we'll be able to do it instantly without having to go to the computer. So I'd like to talk about the prophecies now.
Okay, go.
We have
go
about
for
half hour
it. Go.
Left. Now, before I talk about the prophecies, I'd like to introduce Peter Dunoff and Omran Mikhail Ivanov, because not many people in the United States know who they are. But I consider them two of the greatest spiritual masters of the 20th century, on a par with Paramahansa Yogananda and Ramana Maharshi. Now, Peter Dunoff taught in the first half of the 20th century in Bulgaria, and at one point he had over 40,000 disciples. And his chief disciple was Omran Mikhail Ivanov. He sent him to France in 1937 because he knew that the war was coming. He wanted to establish a base in Western Europe. And both Dunoff and Ivanov gave several thousand lectures, some of which have been published as books. Prosveta.com has Ivanov's books, and Dunoff's books are published by VeraBooks.com. So, like I said before, prophecies is like a doctor's diagnosis or prognosis. And it's a good thing because it's like a wake-up call. You shouldn't have a doom and gloom attitude when you hear that what's coming in 2012. Just as you shouldn't have that attitude when the doctor says you have cancer. People can cure themselves of cancer by changing diet. There are a lot of alternative techniques. You don't have to go through the, what I call the slash burn and poison route. So the doctor can see the signs of cancer in your body through x-rays and blood tests. What a prophet looks at to see the signs of a nation's fate or the fate of the planet is the star. And most people, when they hear the expression a prophet can see coming events in the stars, they think of astrology. Well, that's one level of the meaning of in the stars. Another level is that stars and our sun are intelligent beings on a vast scale with a very high intelligence. And I know this for a fact because I've been sun gazing almost every day for 7 years. And I can say that at some point when you start sun gazing, you'll realize that the sun communicates to people, and you can communicate to the sun, you can ask a question, you can get an answer. And this is how all the Gnostics received their knowledge, their gnosis, through sun gazing. All the Essenes and the Therapeutes were sun gazers, as well as the prophets. So that's another meaning of in the stars. And the third meaning is just as people can travel in their finer body to the etheric retreats, they can travel through space to a point billions of miles ahead to where the solar system is heading. And I believe this is what Peter Dunoff did, that he traveled in his finer body to a point where the solar system is today. And he did this in 1944, 67 years ago. And this is what he said that he saw in 1944. He said in a few decades, our solar system will be entering a region of space where millions of years ago there was a series of supernova explosions in a star cluster. He said that for thousands of years, the solar system and Earth had been plowing through the dust of this multiple explosion. But now we are approaching the end of this dust cloud and are about to enter the fiery center of the explosion, which is like a bubble of energy. He said that the dust cloud has had negative effects on our consciousness, but that the bubble of energetic particles that we will enter will purify us and raise our consciousness. It's sort of like we've been plodding painfully through a dust storm in the desert, and we suddenly break through to find an oasis of light.
That's a great analogy.
Now, when I first read this prophecy, I thought that if this was going to happen in a few decades from 1944, then astronomers should be seeing something now. So I did some research, and what I found was amazing. About 2 years ago, NASA received data from the two Voyagers that were at the edge of the heliosphere and about to enter interstellar space. The heliosphere forms a boundary between the outer solar system and the interstellar space. So that's where the two Voyagers are now, and they're receiving data on what the environment is like at the edge of the solar system. And what the data showed was that there's a region of highly magnetized particles that the astronomers hypothesized were the remnants of a supernova, several supernova explosions. And also, the astronomers said that the solar system had been going through a dust cloud, which they call the local pluff, and that it had been going through it for thousands of years. Now, this to me was incredible.
Uh-huh.
The astronomers were saying almost word for word what Peter Dunoff had predicted 65 years earlier.
I see. Aha. Uh-huh. Amazing.
So it's an amazing confirmation of Peter Dunoff's prophecy. It lends credence to the idea that the rest of his prophecy will come true. And what he said was that along with a change in consciousness, that these magnetic particles would change our consciousness. And this has been proven in laboratory experiments where people were put in a sealed room called a MU room, M-U room. It means magnetic something, I'm not sure what. But they first removed the magnetic field in the room, and what they saw was that the people became highly emotional, and they became very confused. They lost the sense of their body, and they turned the dial the opposite way, and they increased the magnetic field. And what they saw was that people became very sharp, mentally sharp. Their consciousness was raised. And they also became very emotionally stable.
So that's very interesting.
This is what we as a humanity as a whole will experience when we enter this region of space. And at the current speed of the solar system, which is almost 500,000 miles an hour, we'll be entering this sometime toward the end of 2012. So, but it's like a two-edged sword. One edge of the sword would cut through our density and make us more conscious and more harmonious, and the other edge of the sword is the earth changes. So we can't have the one without the other.
Uh-huh.
So Peter Dunoff said that there will be floods, hurricanes, gigantic fires, and earthquakes that will sweep away everything. And just in the last year or so, we've seen this. And
absolutely. Oh, yes. All of that.
He said there will be revolutions, terrible explosions will resound in numerous regions. Where there is earth, water will come, and where there is water, earth will come. And I also researched this part of the prophecy, and I found two reports, one by a Russian scientist, Dr. Alexei Dmitriev, and the other by an Azerbaijani scientist, Dr. Elchin Kalilov. Dr. Dmitriev reported back in 1998, I think it was, that the earth changes were occurring more frequently, caused by highly charged material in interstellar space, which had broken into the interplanetary area of our solar system. He said that this donation of energy was producing excited energy states in all planets as well as the sun. And the effects on Earth were seen in the acceleration of the magnetic pole shift, in the vertical and horizontal ozone content distribution, and in the increased frequency and magnitude of significant catastrophic climatic events. So, Dmitriev, he compiled data from 1963 to 1993, and he showed that during that time, there was a 410% increase in earthquakes, epidemics, droughts, and weather disturbances. That's more than four times in 30 years. But more recent data from Dr. Kalilov showed that since 1998, there's been an exponential increase in this activity. In June of last year, the International Committee on Issues of Global Change in the Geologic Environment issued a report authored by Dr. Kalilov that stated that beginning in 1998, there was a global energy spike in our planet's energy, and it manifested itself across several measures, the several areas, the lithosphere, like the crust of the Earth, the hydrosphere, the ocean, atmosphere, the magnetosphere. This global energy spike has been reflected in the statistical indicators for many different natural disasters that are dangerous to humanity, such as earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, tsunamis, tornadoes, hurricanes, storms, floods, and forest fires. And in the report, there's several graphs that show these statistics. And each one, you see a line that rises very slowly before 1998 and very steeply after 1998. And every single graph is surely closed. It clearly shows that our planet has been energized since 1998, but the report does not offer any hypothesis as to what is causing it. And I was surprised at this because Dr. Dmitriev, in his report, 1998, offered the theory that it's due to the highly charged material in interstellar space breaking into the interplanetary area of the solar system. But I guess Dr. Kalilov wasn't aware of Dr. Dmitriev's work. Otherwise, he would have included that in his reference. Uh-huh. So this is what we we're going to be facing in the next couple of years, and I think it's going to peak in toward the end of 2012, beginning of 2013, when we enter into this region of space. So, as I said, it's a good thing, because along with the Earth changes, there's going to be a change in consciousness. And I'm thinking that the Earth changes are going to be mitigated, because I'm seeing that right now in the solar cycle. I subscribe to a web service where I get an update of the solar activity every 3 hours, and I've been keeping track for the last couple of years, and what I've noticed is that this current solar cycle 24 is very unusual, in that it's not like the last solar cycle where the solar activity increased very steeply. What we're experiencing is a very unusual quiet sun. We haven't had hardly any X flares, and the X flares are the dangerous ones that are most often associated with earthquakes and volcanic eruptions and tsunamis. We did experience an X1 flare back in March, on March 10th. And the X1 is the lowest energy level of the X flare. I think it goes up to 20, is the strongest X flare. And that minor X1 flare resulted in the 8.9 earthquake in Japan. And I think the reason why a small X flare resulted in such a large earthquake is that the Earth itself is being energized by the interstellar particles. So
right.
It's not taking much catalyst from the sun to cause earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, as was required during the last solar cycle. Like in July 14th of 2000, the sun released the X6 flare, which is six times more powerful than the one last March, and it resulted in 2 6.3 earthquakes, one in the Philippines and Indonesia. And a 6.3 earthquake is 26 times less destructive than the 8.9 Japan earthquake. So I think it's a blessing that the sun is very quiet at this time. If the sun let out a X6 or greater flare, I can't imagine what would happen. It would be a lot more catastrophic than the Japan earthquake. So I was meditating on why the sun was so quiet, and I was talking to a friend the other night, and he thought that Helios, who is the cosmic being, the solar logos of our solar system, is deliberately regulating the activity of the sun in response to our prayers and meditations. And it's not just the heart center. There are many, many other organizations who are praying for the mitigation of prophecy and cataclysm. And another organization I'd like to mention is the Children of the Sun Foundation.
The Children of the Sun?
And maybe you can talk about that while I drink some water, get rid of this frog.
Okay, all right. Well, the Children of the Sun, they have a website, childrenofthesun.org, and on the full moon and on new moons, there is a mission for each full moon and new moon. And this last full moon that we had, we were working with the fire element. And we were also working with the Arcturians, the highly evolved beings from Arcturus, from the star system Arcturus. And, you know, during that meditation, I was meditating with the people from Australia. We do a worldwide sweep starting at, well, my time it was 5 o'clock in the morning. And I'm beside this cathedral, and during that meditation, the clock stopped at the cathedral. I thought, oh. The Turians got a little close to that clock. And then by the next day, they had it fixed and up and running. So it wasn't anything major. But that I love this organization, too. We're also going to be doing that meditation tomorrow. The solstice is tomorrow at 1 o'clock. But we're going to stick to our regular times, starting with Australia and moving around the planet, different time zones. So if you want to get involved in that, that's childrenofthesun.org, and they're out of Sedona, Arizona.
I think they're in Mount Shasta as well, aren't they?
Oh yeah, yes. they're all over the planet. They're doing a great work. They have 2,000 people that are working with the energies each new moon and full moon. I think there's 2,000 people around the world, plus everybody else that joins in that can.
So Peter Dunoff, in his prophecy, said that what we are required to do now in preparation for what's coming is to pray, to meditate, pray. And so that's one thing we can do. And another thing we can do is to move away from dangerous areas like the coast and the Midwest, if that's possible, if at all possible. And I think Arizona is a good place, because we're, except for the fires, we're pretty safe from most natural disasters.
Right, and the fires oftentimes are necessary to clear the mountains. It seems horrific, but I understand it's a part of the natural process. Now, it's different when somebody sets the mountain on fire, but I've heard that this is it's not as bad as it seems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that Arizona is a place that where a lot of spiritual organizations are either coming to or thinking of coming to form a spiritual community.
Oh yes, so many, with
especially in the Sedona area.
Sedona. Now, that reminds me that the New Year's conference for the Heart Center is going to be in Carefree, Arizona,
right.
Or
just north of Phoenix.
Just north of Phoenix.
And that'll be December 30th through January 2nd, 2012. And I'll be giving an update on Peter Dunoff's prophecy at that time. And hopefully I'll have some more information. And we hope to have a Native American playing flute music along with the crystal bowls. And, of course, there'll be David Lewis with several messages from Ascended Masters. And trying to think of what other presentations.
He was telling me about a woman that lives there around Phoenix that works with the elementals, with the desert flowers.
I can't wait. She's from Tucson.
Yeah, she's from Tucson. And I can't wait for that presentation, because I'm very much into my gardens, my flowers, and desert flowers, at not only at my home, but the school where I work. So that's going to be a great presentation, too.
Yeah, so I can't
definitely
think of
count me in.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, Wayne. What?
I think it's Cheryl somebody.
Yes, Cheryl.
And also Deborah Lamour is going to be giving a presentation on a vision of Golden Age communities.
Okay. I love to hear the visions. It's wonderful. Just the visions. Like you were talking about the vision of the government, the
and
way things...
Peter Zunoff, he, besides the predictions of the disasters, he does have very positive vision of what's on the other side of the transition. One of the things he said, that the conflict between men and women will be resolved.
I feel that too. I believe that. I was just listening to Patricia Diane Cota Robles. She's from Tucson, Arizona as well. She had a conference over the phone lines yesterday, or the 16th, I guess it was, and she was saying that it's in the area of cause and the causal body, all of this has already been planned out. It's just a matter of time where we are, where our hearts are, and where our feelings and thoughts are, just how soon we will get there. But according to Patricia, from the realms of Illumin Truth, she says that we're way ahead of schedule. We're way ahead, and everything's looking great for us. So that's good news.
Speaking of good news and visions of a golden age, I produced a movie, Manjushri's Vision of the Crystal Golden Age, and it's on the Heart Center website under Media. If you just click on Media and scroll down, you'll find it.
That's Beyond 2012, A Vision for the Golden Crystal Age?
That's the complete title.
Uh-huh. That's beautiful. I suggest everybody look at that. That is a beautiful vision.
And it's not just the pictures are magnificent. They were painted by an artist, Mario Duguay, a French artist, and they're just out of this world.
Mm-hmm.
The music also is very beautiful. That was composed by Harold Grandstaff Moses, who's a genius musician here in Phoenix. And, well, of course, the words of Manjushri were dictated by David Lewis. Those words are also very beautiful. So it's just three beautiful parts of that movie just combined into they have a synergistic effect to just transport people to the Golden Age. Like, when you watch it, like you're in the Golden Age already.
Exactly. I love it. It's beautiful. You did a great job on that. Are we getting short on time? Let's see. We've got a couple of minutes. Anything else? This has just been fascinating to me tonight to hear.
Yeah. I didn't tell people about Melchizedek's prophecy.
I know. We didn't have time. We've just got a minute or two.
I'll be talking more about that at the Heart Center conference end of December. But I will be publishing an article in the July issue of World Explorer magazine. And if people want to subscribe to that, they can go to adventuresunlimited.com. And that's the publishing house of David Hatchett Childress. He publishes many interesting books and that magazine, World Explorer magazine. They'll be coming out early July.
I didn't know he was your brother-in-law.
Yes,
is that what you said? I didn't know that. That's, yeah, I've been following his work, too.
Very interesting person. He travels all over the world all the time.
Oh, yes. All right. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Wayne.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's been great. I just want to remind everybody that tomorrow at 1 o'clock is the summer solstice. I hope everybody will be invoking the magnificent light that will be flooding the earth. We have to remember that the light of God is always victorious, and we are that light. I'll be back on July the 4th, and I'm going to be talking about the true history of the United States, including efforts of Saint Germain and his vision to free the planet, the entire planet, so that the whole planet can be free. So have a wonderful solstice tomorrow, and bye for now.